Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Empower yourself today and follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. With over 3 million downloads and counting, do not miss out on learning more about a topic that interests you. Go over to our website at getlegallyspeaking.com and browse over 100 podcast episodes. Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient, and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Our episodes are free to access. However, if you feel that you would like to support the children's charity that we are raising money for, then head over to our Just Giving page at justgiving.com and search for Hattie Savari, where we are raising money for orphaned children at SOS Children's Villages, one of the worthiest children's charities. Donate as little as £1 for a great cause. Thank you. Hello and welcome to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be on the financial crime during the crisis. I am joined by barrister Matthew McGee of 20 Essex Street Chambers in London. Matt is regularly instructed to appear in the county courts and in all of the divisions of the High Court. And as part of his practice, he undertakes work to obtain urgent court orders concerning emergency relief on financial matters. Matt has also published a book called A Practical Guide to Cyber Fraud Litigation. Thank you very much for joining me, Matt.
Thanks. It's an absolute pleasure to be here.
So before I press record, I'm saying to you, relax, chill out. And here's me stumbling over my words. So there you go. It happens to the best of us.
I'm pleased that you got there first as the professional. This is my first ever podcast. So let's hope that it goes smoothly.
It will go absolutely wonderfully. And actually, do you know, I'm very glad that we're talking about this because financial crime is rife. And I was just saying that before we press record, in any event. But during the crisis, since the lockdown, since COVID, I think it's accelerated exponentially. So let's just start by talking about what we mean by financial crime during the crisis. What are we talking about here, Matt?
Yeah, absolutely. So the short point, it's people being defrauded, being tricked into making payments, which ultimately end up in the pockets of criminals. And you're quite right that this is an issue that has been going on for years and years, but it is particularly acute at the moment because, understandably, people are under a bit more financial pressure than perhaps they were before, or are simply a little bit more anxious and jumpy, and therefore perhaps are more inclined to be taken in by a fraud which perhaps 6 months ago, 12 months ago, they would not have done.
Indeed. No, indeed. I mean, it comes in so many different forms, financial crime, doesn't it? I mean, you know, we can talk about the most common types of financial crime activities during the COVID crisis that people have been exposed to. And I actually only heard one yesterday where I got a WhatsApp message from a friend, a very close friend, that said, listen, if you're told that you need to contribute to the NHS so that everybody can get access to the app and access to where the COVID crisis is, don't click on it, don't go near it. And it just comes in so many different forms. Let's talk about that.
Yes, you're absolutely right. It used to be the case that it would only be cold callers turning up at your front door or by email, but now they come in any means. And actually, the WhatsApp point is one that has become particularly prevalent in the last few months while everyone's been in lockdown, because everyone has been in work WhatsApp group, friendship WhatsApp groups, and passing on these sorts of messages. And really, the sort of financial crime that we're talking about is preying on people's goodwill. So things like contributing to the NHS or making charitable donations. And the other sort, of course, is preying on people's current insecurities and saying, for example, you might get a text message saying, yes, you've made an application for one of the various government relief schemes. You have been approved and follow this link, enter your bank details, and then we'll be making payments to you.
It's terrible. It really is. I mean, you know, everybody in my family, I have to say, has been exposed to financial crime over the years. And one of the ones that my father actually received was a phone call saying, you need to pay us £200 over the phone now so that we can provide you with anti-virus software to all of your household. And he did. He did. So he gave all his debit card details. They took the £200. But this comes, you know, when we talk about the words financial crime, I think it's somewhere in our minds we think, well, that's a really complicated way of life. But it isn't. They tap into you through your phone, emails that you receive that are disguised as your bank, disguised as your insurer, perhaps, or some kind of corporate that you do business with. Oh, one of the ones that I've received a lot more of, actually, since March and the lockdown at the end of March is, you need to re-enter your bank details. Click on this link on the email.
Yes, and I've had the similar ones, and you know, occasionally I've been very tempted to click that button and follow that link. But generally, I think you can apply the adage, if it's too good to be true, it probably is. So in my case, I actually had an email which looked pretty good for, and it looked
they do, they look so real. This is what's frightening. They really do look so real, but you can't. Sometimes you really can't tell the difference. Honestly, they're that good.
Yeah, and I think. I mean, this one was from HMRC, and to be fair to them, the real HMRC has a system for this. They've got a specific email address. They say, if you get any strange or unusual email, send it to this address, and we will tell you whether it's genuine or not. Now, this email I got said, oh, you've got a tax refund of coming through, click this link and
I've had one of those, I have to say.
So I was very, very tempted. I did check with HMRC. Unfortunately, I didn't have a tax refund. But it was about the right time of year. It was in the right format. It looked very good. So I think when you're looking at these sorts of situations, there's, I suppose, three sort of general rules you can use to try and help protect yourself from falling victim to this. And the point I was saying here about checking, that's certainly one of those points. If you're given if you receive a message, WhatsApp, text message, email, phone call, whatever it might be, the first thing to do is to just stop and pause for a moment. Because as your example with your father shows, often they're asking for you to take action immediately, and there'll often be a consequence. So either it's take action now and we can protect your family, or take action now or we'll cut off your broadband or your power supply, whatever it might be.
I have a TV license. Imagine the TV license, Matt, came through saying you must renew. Now, given that we only renew our TV licenses once a year, I went through to renew it because I thought, yes. And then I thought, hold on, I never renew my TV license. And this was last month in May. Never. It's in October. Ours is October. And I thought, right, I've got to get out the house file now. I've got to look at when I last renewed it. And I did. And it was a fraud, but it looked exactly like the TV license renewing email that I get. And it's so easy to get caught out when you do things. You pay for them online. You pay for them through the link that you're sent, you know, renewal other insurance process, something like that. And it's done once a year. And you get that email during, you know, a time where people's minds have been on a bit, you know, understandably a variety of concerns with work and schools and money and redundancy and furlough and everything else. And then, you know, I can't even imagine the scale of people that actually could have gotten duped into these sort of things. But I think you're absolutely right. Just stop. Don't do anything. Pause.
Yeah, that's got to be the first step, because I think I'm really struggling to think of a genuine situation where you're going to have to take action immediately and it'll be unexpected. It's different, of course, if you've been receiving letters for the last 3 months from your power supplier saying, you've got this unpaid bill, we need you to pay.
You just hit the nail on the head there. You absolutely hit the nail on the head there, Matt. The question to ask is, how often are you going to be hit by something to say pay now when you're not aware of it?
Yeah.
That's a key point, really is.
Absolutely, definitely. So if you do get that, it could be genuine. This does happen, but it's incredibly unlikely that you have to take action immediately. Even HMRC and they say you've not paid your tax, they're not going to say you must pay your tax now, otherwise we'll send the bailiffs in tomorrow.
Well, I don't know about that. No, I'm only joking. No, you will be aware of it, is what we're saying. It will be something that you will be aware of. It's very unlikely that a situation will come up where they say you're not aware of it and they'll say you have to pay now. And you're not, as I said, you're just not aware of that.
Yeah, so you have to take that time to check it with whatever the genuine source is. And the critical point is, check it by a different means from which you were contacted. So if you get an email saying you've got to pay your TV license, don't just reply to that email address saying, do I have to pay my TV license?
Yes.
The fraudster will say yes.
Yes, they'll say absolutely. Here you go, click here again.
Precisely. But if you get that email, leave the email for a moment, go online, find a telephone number and phone the person. And probably in your example, the TV license agency will say, nope, we've got all your payments for now. You don't have to do anything.
Yes, yes. I mean, there are obviously instances where many instances, and again, it's happened in my family since March, where money has been taken from a bank account fraudulently. Do the banks have a legal duty to assist people who have personally been victims to financial crime? Now, I have my own view and I put my own pressures on the bank at this point, but let's talk about that, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, it's a funny one because banks have this unusual position where they are, at the end of the day, businesses that are run for profit. They're not part of the government, although the government owns a lot of some of them at the moment. But yes, they don't have the same public service role. At the same time, they're so central to the way we live at the moment. They do have more duties than just any other business. So the short point is that, yes, they do have a legal duty to help you, but only to a limited extent. So it doesn't go to the ends of the earth and beyond. If it's your bank, then the starting point is that you have a contract with your bank and that'll be governed by their standard terms. But there are also all sorts of other obligations put on the banks by both UK regulations and also at the moment EU regulations. So the most important one is a bit of legislation called the Payment Services Regulations. Now, I don't anticipate your listeners want to sit and read these. They are very long and detailed. But the short
that's what the lawyers do, Matt.
Exactly. But the short point is that this does put some obligations on the bank to effectively make sure that any payments that you are making or that are being made on your account are properly authorised. And it also says that banks have to know who their customers are and conduct proper identity checks. So to the extent you can show that a bank has allowed a transaction to take place on your account which has not been authorised by you, then there's some sort of get back. Now, of course, difficulty we have is in the sorts of cases we're talking about, actually often the case is that you have authorised the payment, but you've just been tricked into doing so.
Now, yes.
In that case, there's another scheme, which is actually a voluntary one at the moment, but a lot of the big banks have signed up to. And it's a bit of a mouthful. It's called the Contingent Reimbursement Model Code, which is a very grand title.
Why wouldn't it be? It's linked to the law. It has to be a mouthful. Let's simplify that then.
But the purpose of this is to say that if you are the victim of the sorts of fraud that we're talking about here, then the banks have to refund you unless they say that you have been grossly negligent in allowing the fraud to be perpetrated.
Now, I can just hear the arguments flying all over the place. Grossly negligent because you gave your card details or because you clicked on an email or some sort. I mean, I have to say that we as a family have been a victim of financial fraud during the COVID crisis as a result of it, in the sense that it was a new approach that just duped us. I was very, very hard with the bank and I said, look, you have to get my money back because I'm telling you that is fraudulent. So it's up to you to say we're not going to allow that company to keep the money that we've given the money to. And the extraordinary thing is, and this is what I found with banks, they are able to communicate with fraudsters sometimes.
Absolutely, and with other banks, and that's definitely the first thing to do if you think that you have made a payment which actually, with a little bit of hindsight, you shouldn't have made. The first thing to do is to phone up your bank. They all have fraud teams which are 24 hours a day, because if you log that transaction with your bank as a fraudulent payment, then if it's still in your bank system somewhere, they can stop it leaving and they can get it back.
Yes, yes.
Even if you made this payment a couple of days ago, it's been moved from your account into some other bank account with another bank, your bank can contact that other bank and say, this has been reported as a fraud. We want to essentially lock everything down and freeze it.
Yes.
So even if it's moved to the fraud to the scam, it doesn't mean it's the end of the battle. So the first thing to do is really to contact your bank, because you may well be able to get it back.
No, indeed. And I have to say, I had in the incidents that we went through, I had the bank say the money hadn't gone out yet, but I was made aware because it was on a pending transaction.
Yeah.
So it was shown as pending. And I was thinking, I haven't paid that out of my account. And the bank tried to tell me, and this is a well-known high street bank, so I'm not going to name them, but I'm just going to say what they said. Oh, we can't stop it because it's pending. And I said, you will stop it and you will not allow it to go. That's the most ridiculous thing I've heard, that you cannot stop money going out because it's still in my account but pending to go out. I'm telling you, that's a fraudulent transaction. And they did stop it, but only because I took that hard line. And, you know, I think there needs to be more clarity for banks with their customers. And I definitely think they need to sign up to the service that allows them to say, okay, we will give the extra mile of fraudulent transaction protection. Because, you know, I sound like a grandmother saying this, but it's true. And you're younger than me, Matt, so it's all right. You can make the face on the other side of the screen. I can accept that. We're going into more and more of a digital lifestyle. So, you know, even with COVID now, you think that, I think this is going to be a great reason why someday people are going to say, no, don't use cash, because cash goes from hand to hand and possibly bacterias or germs or whatever will pass from people to people easier. So more online, more money in the bank on the plastic card or online. So there has to be more in place, I think. There's got to be. The pressure has to be on the banking system to try and assist people here. So what about if I've just mentioned how I put pressure on the bank there, but what about if the bank's putting pressure on the individual and saying, and even suggesting that you could have been part of that fraud? I mean, I heard of a situation like that only about 3 weeks ago, where this lady who's been a customer of a bank for 30 years had a fraudulent transaction. She called up the bank. The bank said, can you come into our branch at this time on this day? This was about 3 weeks ago now, so it was in May 2020. She went in and they put her into a meeting room. They called in sort of compliance people as well. And almost she had to ask desperately to leave the room. They almost gave her the Spanish Inquisition and was suggesting that she was part of the fraud, because the person that took the money had a very similar name in terms of cultural name to her.
Yes. And I think that's unfortunately not an uncommon story, particularly you mentioned the cultural name. So that over the last couple of years, the banks have been tightening up. Perhaps in the past, they weren't quite as rigorous as they should have been with checking the identities of their customers and so on. So they have started closing down accounts in recent years. But regrettably, you do see stories in the press, and clearly you're getting some that you're being told directly, where people feel that there's no reason for them having been targeted other than their nationality or their name.
Yes, yes.
Now, here you get into very tricky crossover. As I said, the banks have this strange position where they're private entities. There's no obligation on them to do business with you. They're entitled to say, no, we don't want to. But
yes.
At the same time, if you're cut out of the banking system, as you say, we're not going to be having cash indefinitely. Actually, it causes you real issues. So it is a tricky situation. Ideally, perhaps don't go on your own if you're called into the bank with some sort of question mark. Have a bit of moral support. But ultimately, I'm sure your listeners don't have anything to hide on that front. They're not part of
yes.
the fraud. So
no.
Answer the questions, because if you don't answer the questions, the banks have their own obligations under the criminal law to prevent any money laundering and suspicious activity, and they are entitled to close down your bank accounts. So do answer the questions to try and keep access. However, if you think that you are being treated unfairly by the banks, particularly if they are saying they're going to close down your bank accounts immediately, then there are options available to you. So there's the Financial Ombudsman Service, which is free to use. It is in a legal type framework, but it's not as formal as the courts. And it does certainly oversee the banks. And I actually was contacted only yesterday about somebody who is having their, it's a small business, the bank is threatening to close their business account because they think there's been some dubious activity. So the business is currently trying to open up a new account with a different bank to keep its business going on. But in the current crisis that we're sitting in, it's taking a lot longer than normal to open the new account. So they're currently in this funny position where they're trying to negotiate with their existing bank to effectively just let the bank account run on for the next few weeks, because otherwise the business is going to be unable to pay its staff, it'll be unable to pay its suppliers, and effectively it's going to fold. So you do have to have a bit of a negotiation there, but I would suggest at least threatening the option of going to the Financial Ombudsman.
Yes, and I think it's important to also say that if you are going to go to the Financial Ombudsman, you need to make a formal complaint to the bank first. Formal complaint with a formal response, because when you go to the Financial Ombudsman, the first thing they will say is what's been the final response and the formal response from if it's a bank that you're complaining about. But certainly if you feel threatened or like you're being penalised in any shape or form, because of course banks have a duty, we all get it, and you know, I support that duty because they are trying to protect the money that we all have in their accounts. However, there's a way of doing things, and sometimes people are directly involved in the fraud. I'm not saying that when people are called in and they're not involved in the fraud, sometimes they are, but if you know, you're not, which is the likelihood of it, you're not involved in that kind of activity, you do feel like you've had, you know, the bank's been a bit of a sort of policeman on you, but in a way which has been a bit unpalatable, then I would say make those views very clear to the bank, because it's not right. That shouldn't happen in any shape or form. But we've got time for one more question, Matt. And I think... let's tell our listeners what kind of steps they can take to protect themselves from hopefully becoming a victim to financial fraud during these very tricky and unprecedented times that we find ourselves in.
Yes, so I had a little look earlier actually, and the National Crime Agency has quite a good little three-part slogan. Everything's got to be done in the three-part slogan these days. Their three-part slogan is quite effective. So it's stop, challenge, protect. And I sound like I'm now on sort of the evening challenge.
I like that.
But so the point here is, we touched on it briefly earlier, but it is worth ending on this point. It's very important. If you are being presented with a situation which you have any doubts about whatsoever, first, stop. Take a moment to think. Is this genuine? Is there any reason why I should doubt this or check before making the payment or clicking the link, whatever it might be?
And I think what you said earlier is very clear. Cross-check it through other means. Don't email if it's an email back the company. Check your paperwork if it's relative to something at home, like, for example, the TV license situation I myself was in, or go through Google to check separately. Check through other means.
Yes, so that's the second stage. And then the third and final one is protect. And this goes two ways. First is protect yourself by phoning up your bank as soon as possible. If you have made a payment you shouldn't have done. But the other option, of course, particularly for small businesses, is preemptive protection and get insurance. And there are insurance companies which offer policies designed to cover exactly this sort of fraud. And given the prevalence of the fraud, and in some cases it can be for millions and millions of pounds, and it can cripple businesses, it is well worth considering. It is just part of the normal insurance you get for any business, or indeed any individual. It might even be part of your home policy insurance.
Yes, no, indeed. I think that's sound. And I have to say, what we might need to do, Matt, I think it'd be a good idea for us to put up just a one-page article on our news and article section, just outlining the National Crime Agency contact details there, and any other, maybe the Financial Ombudsman as well. So our listeners have got something to go and click on and revert back to. But Thank you ever so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure to record with you.
Likewise, and yes, first podcast, hopefully not the last one I've done.
No, definitely not. No, I think we're definitely up for a part two. I think there's a lot of ground that we can cover, and there will be questions that our listeners send us in that we'll be more than happy to answer during a part two podcast. So what I'll say to our listeners is don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts, and you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening.
Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Our episodes are free to access. However, if you feel that you would like to support the children's charity that we are raising money for, then head over to our Just Giving page at justgiving.com and search for Hattie Savari, where we are raising money for orphaned children at SOS Children's Villages, one of the worthiest children's charities. Donate as little as £1 for a great cause. Thank you. Empower yourself today and follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube and LinkedIn by searching Get Legally Speaking to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. With over 3 million downloads and counting, do not miss out on learning more about a topic that interests you. Go over to our website at getlegallyspeaking.com and browse over 100 podcast episodes. Empower yourself today with legal knowledge and follow us on Instagram, Twitter or Facebook to get access to jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com.